Good morning and welcome to the Court of Appeals. This is the second matter on our calendar today. I know that you're both familiar with our procedures here, but just to go over them, please introduce yourself when you come to the podium, which you can raise or lower as you wish. And each of you will have 15 minutes for your argument, and counsel for appellant, you'll have the additional time for rebuttal, so whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Your Honors, counsel. My name is John Archigo, appearing today on behalf of Appellant Meng Veng. There are two central issues in this case that deprived appellant of a fair trial. The first is the district court's decision to keep on a juror on the jury who admittedly came forward and informed the parties and the court that she was having difficulty following the state's key witness, the alleged victim in this case. She was having difficulty following her testimony and trying to rationalize that with the interpretation that we were, that the rest of us were hearing through the interpreter. The state's key witness in this case was testifying through the use of a Hmong interpreter, and we had a Hmong-speaking juror on our jury that nobody knew, nobody was aware during the trial, the judge or the parties was aware that this particular juror spoke Hmong. She was not inquired of that during voir dire, but to her credit, she did come forward after she heard the state's key witnesses' testimony and came forward and informed the court that she felt that she was having, that the juror felt that the witness was exhibiting some frustration with the interpretation that the rest of us were hearing, and that this particular juror felt that there was an incompatibility between what we were hearing in English through the interpreter with what was actually being said by the witness during her testimony. The court obviously brought this issue to our attention, took a recess to try to fully address it. The court brought in the witness and the interpreter, and the court asked the two individuals if they felt that they were communicating with each other, if they were having any issues communicating or understanding each other. And the parties indicated that they felt that they were able to understand and communicate with each other. The district court also asked the witness if she felt that the interpreter was giving, I guess, a correct English interpretation of her testimony. However, obviously, that individual, the witness, is speaking with the aid of an interpreter. Back at the time of the incident, her husband helped her communicate with the officers who responded. The witness herself admitted that she spoke a little bit of English, but not very much. So I don't think it was necessarily an accurate response by the witness for her to be able to say whether or not the interpreter was the English responses were correct, because her understanding of the English language was admittedly limited.
So, Mr. Archigo, if you could, looking at what Judge Gruing said she found this juror to be credible when she said that she would follow the cautionary instruction that Judge Gruing gave her. I mean, we usually think about credibility assessments in terms of witnesses, but isn't that credibility assessment of a juror entitled to, you know, our deference? Don't we defer to that and need to?
Certainly, in general, Your Honor, absolutely. Credibility issues, determinations are given great deference. But we also had some conflicting answers by this individual juror.
But the way I read what the judge said was that she gave the juror credibility when she said she would follow that cautionary instruction. And isn't that entitled to great deference?
Yes, and the juror said that she can follow the judge's instruction on that issue. However, she also indicated that it was going to be tough to follow that instruction, and that she said, "I think so."
But I'm just getting to it. But Judge Gruing, I don't believe she weighed in on the credibility of those statements. I'm sure more familiar with the record than I am.
Well, you're correct, Your Honor, that Judge Gruing did make a determination that she felt that the juror would be able to follow her instruction, and that was the reason that she ultimately kept the juror on the panel, or in the jury. However, this individual juror did indicate, Your Honor, that she was having difficulty reconciling what this witness's testimony was and what the English interpretation was. And she indicated in response to defense questioning that her recollection of the witness's testimony was based on what this individual was saying in Hmong rather than the English interpretation that was being given. So even though we have Judge Gruing making this credibility determination, I think we still have an issue with this juror.
Is that then, are the facts that the testimony or the additional statements that the juror made, is it your argument then it was abuse of discretion to believe that she could follow, to accept that she could follow, to believe her that she could follow the instruction in light of those other statements? That the credibility determination itself by the district court was an abuse of discretion in light of her other statements?
I think, Your Honor, it's my position that it was an abuse of discretion to keep this individual juror in the jury. Given what we know through her individual questioning when she was sitting before the parties, I guess the totality of her responses, if we want to limit it and say that Judge Gruing abused her discretion in determining that she was credible, obviously that can be a finding here, but I think given all of this individual's juror's responses to the entire line of questioning indicated other reasons that this juror should not have remained on the jury. And those issues that we pointed out were this individual's admissions that she was basing her recollection of the state's primary witness in this case, the complainant in this case. This individual juror was saying, my recollection of her testimony is based on what she is saying in Hmong.
Mm-hmm. And I'm just wondering, I guess, could we reverse without deciding that the district court abused its discretion in concluding that the juror was credible?
The court can make finding.
Because we don't make findings, obviously. But, you know, I mean, is there a way to do what you want to do without saying that credibility determination was an abuse of discretion in light of the totality of the circumstances?
I think this court can hold that Judge Gruing abused the court's discretion in keeping the juror on the jury. And whether or not we need to call out the credibility determination, I don't know that we necessarily have to identify that. We can say it was an abuse of discretion to keep that individual juror on the jury and not make her an alternate.
Right. I'm just wondering why, though. I mean, why, in light of the fact that the district court believed that the juror could follow the instruction in the end, based on everything that the district court heard, it seems like one would have to say that was an incorrect determination to make, that the totality of evidence shows that that's just simply an abuse of discretion to believe the juror could do that. And, you know, I mean, obviously that's a steep hill to climb, right?
I understand. Yep, it absolutely is. And I understand the issues that we brought are steep hills to climb, mm-hmm. Under these circumstances and given the standards of review. But I think that there is sufficient evidence in this case to find that it was an abuse of discretion if Judge Gruing abused her discretion in making that credibility determination, then that's certainly the basis that this court can rely on. And I think given the totality of that individual juror's responses to individual questioning, not only did she say, and I guess I take issue with the juror's responses, the characterization of them, that she can follow the district court's instructions, because her responses were, I think so, I think I can follow it. And at other points during defense questioning, she recognized that she was hesitant in giving that response and that it was going to be difficult in those circumstances because this individual juror felt that there was this inconsistency between the witness's testimony and what the interpretation was. The juror went on to indicate that she felt that the witness was getting frustrated because of the inconsistency in the interpretation. And then she was getting angry.
But counsel, at one point she did say, I think so, when asked if she could follow the judge's instruction. But then when Mr. Nguyen asked her, so can you rely on what he said in English in your deliberation, and can you follow the judge's instruction not to share the Hmong interpretation, she said, yes.
That's correct.
That's pretty clear, isn't it? I mean, it's not equivocal.
Sure, it's a clear answer, but she's also given clear answers that she was having a hard time adopting that instruction and following that instruction because she did, in her opinion, felt that she was hearing something different from the witness than what we had from the interpreter. So it's true, yes, at one point she says, yes, I can follow the instruction. Other times she's saying it's going to be hard for me to do that.
Jurors have tough jobs.
They do. They do. And in this case, what makes it, I think, more important in this case when we're looking at whether it deprived the appellant of a fair trial is this was the state's key witness. This was the complainant, and the count that appellant was convicted of really depended largely on her testimony. It was an incident that happened between those two individuals for the most part. Mr. Wynn recognized that this witness was really the state's key witness, which distinguished it from, and admittedly there's not a lot of case law on this point, but the case that the district court brought to our attention was this Davenport opinion out of California. And Mr. Wynn, the prosecutor at the time, recognized that there was a difference between that, the facts and circumstances and the holding in that case, compared to what the circumstances were in our particular case. In Davenport, it wasn't much of an essential witness really at all, and the issue that witness was testifying on didn't have a lot of bearing on that particular defendant's guilt. And I think that's a very key distinction here in this case, is that we are dealing with really the central witness in our case, and we have a juror that's come forward and said that she's recognized all of these inconsistencies and that she's recognized maybe some frustration and anger out of this juror based on the difference in interpretation. And this juror then goes back into deliberations really with a different viewpoint, with a different basis of understanding and knowledge than any of the other jurors. And even though she's at one point is saying, yes, I can follow the judge's instructions, there are other times where she admitted that it's tough. It's going to be tough to follow the judge's instructions in this case. And
well, but after she said yes, she even then further asked the court a question for clarification and said, when she, meaning the alleged victim, starts talking again, or if there are other witnesses that come in that only speak English, to just go by what the interpreter says, correct? And the court said, yes, absolutely. And then the judge asked her, do you understand that? And she said, yes. So, I mean...
Right, Your Honor, and I think that can also sort of be indicative of her... The state's witness had already testified at that point. She was the witness at issue was done testifying.
But she was asking about other witnesses.
Correct, which I think goes to the point of her sort of confusion during that witness's testimony and what she was supposed to be paying attention to and relying to. It indicates that maybe she was confused. I'm not sure what I should have done with this particular witness. And the witness is done testifying at this point, and that's the key witness. And so I think that also shines some light on the juror's confusion on what she was supposed to be doing when that witness was testifying, which again goes back to the issue of her really following along with that witness and with the witness's own answers in Hmong.
It's not a per se problem for a witness to speak, for a juror to speak the language of a witness, even if it's being translated for other non-speakers of that language, right?
Right.
Okay, so the problem is only if the interpretation is the problem, right? I mean, it would, the idea of following along one versus the other, if someone speaks more than one language and they happen to speak language there, they will hear both. They will understand both. That just will happen.
Yep, and I understand, and it's common in maybe Spanish-speaking
sure.
Witnesses in really a lot of today's cases, and I think maybe there were some issues. I can't recall off the top of my head if these were issues that were raised during trial when we were talking about it, or perhaps respondents suggested it in its brief. If we have maybe some type of specialized particular knowledge of a witness testifying and maybe medical testimony, for example, and we have a doctor or something that's on. So I understand, obviously, that there is no per se rule on perhaps a juror is going to have some intimate knowledge about a particular issue. But what makes it unique in this case is we have a juror coming forward and saying, I had a problem with this witness's testimony. I had a problem with what the jurors were hearing in English and responses. And so that's what makes it an issue. That's what caused the concern, is when we have an actual juror coming forward. Same thing would happen if it was a Spanish-speaking juror would come in and say, I think I noticed some inconsistencies with, I was following along with the witness's answers in Spanish, and what we were hearing was different. So I think that's what makes it different in this case.
May I ask you, were there alternates sitting with the jury at this time?
There were, Your Honor.
I don't see in the transcript, at least, that we have here, where you actually asked the court to remove Ms. Zhang Yak. What page would that be on? Is it in this transcript?
Are you referring to the transcript in the respondent's brief in the addendum?
Yeah, I mean, I see kind of where this all ends, and I see that you're still expressing concern about her on page 21 in the transcript. But I don't really actually say,
yep.
See where
if
you...
If I could, Your Honor, just beginning on the bottom of page 18 of the addendum.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
I indicated that we weren't comfortable with this juror remaining any longer. I brought to the court's attention that we had two alternates.
Okay.
And at that point, the court then had a question, and Mr. Nguyen sort of jumped in and began.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you very much. You'll have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Thomas Raggetts. I'm an assistant Ramsey County attorney, and I represent respondent state of Minnesota in this matter. Unless this court has questions, I don't have much to say this morning because this is not a close case. Under well-established case law set up in my brief, the evidence here was clearly sufficient to support the conviction, and Judge Gruen clearly did not abuse her discretion by imposing a guideline sentence, in this case, a stay of imposition with no additional jail time. Now, on the juror issue, there's 2 points I'd like to make. First, we haven't really talked about it today, but it came up in the brief, a sort of assertion that this juror was somehow biased. But appellant has not met his burden, and the burden is on him, to show that she was predisposed to convict, that she had some sort of bias that was going to infect her view of this case. What she said here was she thought the victim was frustrated by the translation. That's not bias. So that's point number one. Point number two is what we've been talking about this morning. To the extent there was concern below about this juror not relying on the translation, that concern was alleviated by the juror's answers to questions. And this court's already gone through what I was going to read to it this morning. At the very end of the questioning, the juror says an unequivocal yes to the question, can you follow the instruction to just rely on the translation? And then the juror goes beyond that and conscientiously gets clarification and says, so not only for this witness, but for any witnesses, I just have to rely on the translation. And Judge Gruen says, yes, just to make it perfectly clear, I'm telling you again, you have to rely on the translation. Do you understand that? The juror says yes. Doesn't get any more clear than that. I mean, if you look at the cases, for example, where a juror says, I tend to believe police officers, as long as the juror ultimately gets to the point of saying, I'll treat a police officer the same as any other witness, that's good enough. It doesn't matter what the juror said earlier. And to the extent there was inconsistent testimony here, or inconsistent answers, to the extent earlier on the juror waffled a little bit, saying it'd be hard, well, that's why we have credibility determinations. The judge made a credibility determination that what the juror ultimately said, I will follow the instruction, I can follow the instruction, I understand the instruction, that was credible. And there's no basis for overturning that credibility determination. The law is clear, of course, that we defer to trial judges' credibility determinations. We also defer to judges' determinations of whether a juror has been rehabilitated. And on appeal, we presume that jurors follow instructions. It's not uncommon for jurors to hear evidence that then gets stricken. But we don't say, well, once the bell is rung, there's nothing you can do about it. We presume the jurors will follow the instruction not to rely on any evidence that's been stricken. And we can presume here this juror followed the instruction to only rely on the translation, and indeed the juror said that's what she would do. And that's pretty much all I have to say on the juror issue. I'll throw in one more quick point since I have 12 minutes left on the sentencing issue, which is If anything here, we had an aggravating factor. We had a violation of the zone of privacy. This happened in this woman's home in the middle of the night. She's a young mother, and she is scared to death because she's been trapped in her own bathroom. So Judge Gruen didn't have to depart, even if there were departure factors. But if anything here, there was an aggravating factor. So clearly, it was not an abuse of discretion to impose a stay of imposition. And unless this court has additional questions, I will simply ask that you affirm the conviction.
We started out talking about this in terms of a credibility determination. Is that, I don't know if that was, I'm just looking back in your brief. I don't remember if it was exactly briefed that way, as a credibility determination by the district court. I want to understand whether credibility is really the right frame for analyzing this issue.
I think I did argue that in my brief, that you defer to credibility. I think I even note in my statement of facts that you don't second-guess credibility determinations. I could be thinking of a different brief. But I think ultimately it is the right way to look at it here, because appellant's argument is essentially, well, she said it would be hard, and then later she said she could do it. I'm not sure those are even inconsistent, but to the extent they are, someone's got to decide which is correct. Is she not going to be able to do it because it's hard, or is she going to be able to do what she says she can do? She said she could do it. She said she understood. The judge found her credible, so I think that is the correct way to look at it, and I don't see any basis for telling Judge Gruen it was an error of law to believe this juror or to follow our general practice of presuming the jurors will follow instructions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any rebuttal?
Just very briefly, Your Honor. Sticking on this juror issue, looking back at the addendum, respondent's addendum, starting on page 13, that's where some of her responses, she starts to indicate that she noticed the witness's frustration, that she was getting louder. It was this juror's opinion that she didn't know if the witness was understanding what was being interpreted at the same time. She felt that the witness was getting frustrated. The court then went to inquire with the juror and told the juror that she has to rely on what the interpreter was saying, and if she asked the juror if she understood that. And the juror says, yeah. This is on page 14. The court asked, do you feel like you can follow that instruction? The juror says, I think so. That's not an equivocal yes. She's saying, I think I can. And then in response to additional questions from myself, she indicated that it makes it, she's having this difficulty in that it gets frustrating trying to reconcile the interpretation with the witness's testimony, and that her recollection was coming from what the witness was saying in Hmong. The juror told us that she had jotted down some instances on the notepad where she noticed these inconsistencies. The district court didn't let us get into that issue on what issue she was having. It wasn't until nearly where we were done questioning this individual juror where the juror brought to the court's attention and asked the court this question about whether if future witnesses come in and testify through an interpreter, am I supposed to listen to the interpreter? And the court at that point at the very end says, yes, now that's my instruction for you. You are only to rely on what an interpreter is saying. So it's at the tail end where the judge asked, do you think you can do that? And she says yes at that point. So we went through this entire line of questioning where she was indicating a difficulty with that instruction, indicating a difficulty trying to reconcile the testimony versus the interpretation. And given all of those circumstances, I think that led to the abuse of discretion in keeping the juror on the jury. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The matter was well argued. We will take the matter under advisement and issue an opinion within 90 days.
Robert F. Gort et al. Versus Lucille Gort et al.